I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday, the 12th of November. The Public Policy Forum here in Milwaukee had a viewpoint luncheon late in October when the mental health and justice systems collide. And several of the presenters are with us this hour to discuss why more than half of the 11,000 admissions to Milwaukee County Psychiatric Crisis Service last year involved an emergency detention by police. What changes are taking place in inpatient and crisis care? Are there substantial changes underway? Do we have the types and numbers of services that will keep people with mental illness out of crisis? What kind of crisis intervention training are police officers receiving? Are we sentencing too many people to jail who might benefit more from treatment? We have three guests with us in our Milwaukee studios this hour. The president of the Public Policy Forum, Rob Henken, who was last with us talking about transportation, a man of vast knowledge. Also joining us in our studio is Milwaukee County Chief Deputy District Attorney Kent Lovern, and also with us the Milwaukee County Health and Human Services Director Hector Colon. Thank you, all of you, for being in our studios. This has come to the forefront because of some cases that received a lot of publicity, certainly, where mentally ill people who were on the street had encounters with police, and they weren't always positive encounters. Also, Meg Kissinger did a terrific job a couple of years ago of outlining what the problems are in this area. Somebody has written that Milwaukee, particularly, has a mental health system that focuses less on continual care and more on emergency psychiatric treatment than any other city in the nation. Is that a fair statement, Rob?
Well, I think it's certainly a statement that was fair as of two or three years ago, and I'll let Director Colon, I'm sure, will want to speak to some of the really substantial progress that has been made over the last couple of years. But I think without question, the Public Policy Forum, in partnership with a couple of national consulting firms, has done a series of analyses looking at our system, comparing our system to other places that have high-functioning mental health systems. And clearly, the notion that far too often the front door to our mental health system is law enforcement, as opposed to having the front door be a broad array of community-based services where people can receive treatment prior to needing crisis and emergency care, that's something that we have to address. And there are lots of things going on to address that. It's a work in progress, is our assessment, but it's a very, very important process to have.
And why is it law enforcement that's the first line here?
A variety of different reasons. And when you talk to people about this issue, typically there are three issues or three elements of this issue that are cited. The first is, do law enforcement, Milwaukee Police Department officers in particular, have the type and level of training so that when they do encounter people in mental health crisis, might there be other opportunities to divert and not to necessarily have to take to the mental health complex in Wauwatosa in an involuntary manner. So police training is a part of it. Another thing is the law and the way the law in Wisconsin is written and the way the law is applied specifically to Milwaukee County. Milwaukee County is unique in that decisions on whether to detain somebody under an emergency detention must be made within a 24-hour time frame at the mental health complex as opposed to 72 hours in every other county in the state of Wisconsin. Finally, however, there is a question we touched on in your first question, which is, do we have the type of mental health and behavioral health services that are accessible to people in the community that they can access for treatment before they have a crisis and before they even get to the point where law enforcement might have to intercede?
Hector Colon, do we, or are we in the process of building one?
Yes, thank you for the question. Over the last 4 years, have really made some substantial investments in community-based services. In fact, over $15 million of new or enhanced community-based investments have been made. We've also leveraged tens of millions of dollars to help us with our redesign efforts. These are crisis services in the community, housing services in the community, peer support services in the community, and also crisis services. As a result of this, in addition to our partnerships, we've really expanded our partnerships with the private health systems, numerous nonprofit organizations, as well as the criminal justice system. As a result of these efforts, we have made some substantial progress. For example, we've seen a 50% reduction in psychiatric inpatient admissions at the mental health complex, a 30% reduction in emergency room detentions, and a 20% reduction in emergency room visits. So that is some substantial progress that has been made as a result of these partnerships, as a result of these investments that we've made, but more work needs to be done. In terms of too many individuals coming to our emergency room, yes, there are too many individuals, and there's a couple reasons for that. One is in how we compare to other states and counties. There's really no other county, to my knowledge, that operates an emergency room and a psychiatric inpatient facility. And because of that, we've become the safety net for the community. In other communities, in other states, private health systems, a police officer, if there's emergency detention, they'll take them directly to the nearest hospital. So that doesn't happen here. Now, whether that is a bad or good, there's varying opinions about that. But one thing I will say is that I think we have an opportunity in this community to work with our private health systems to create a place where they have the expertise to evaluate these individuals. Not all health systems right now are equipped or have the technical expertise to do that. At the mental health complex, we do. But we want to be able to get out of that inpatient business and be in line with the rest of the country and just oversee community-based services from a quality perspective, from a purchasing perspective, and get better at coordinating the care that currently exists out in the community right now.
Mm-hmm. Kent, how many of these cases do the people wind up in jail when perhaps they are more in need of treatment?
You know, the reality is we did a study here a couple years ago in conjunction with the Public Defender's Office, Police Department, and Sheriff's Office. It gave us information along with BHD to identify the largest consumers of mental health services and their overlay with the criminal justice system. And we identified the criteria were how many people who were arrested and served time in the county jail, maybe awaiting a charge or for a municipal warrant or something. We also identified the people who had three or more calls for service to the Milwaukee Police Department. See, these were frequent people who were frequently receiving attention from law enforcement officials. We identified 85 people who were who were spending $5 million just in BHD alone on.
Oh my goodness!
And that doesn't include the cost of law enforcement services or jailing or courts or prosecutors or anything. And the reality is, we looked at that 85 because, again, you're wondering what is their intersection with the criminal justice system. The reality is that the majority of those people, not all of them, but the majority of them were committing very low-level offenses for which, if there was a structure to treat their mental illness in the community, I think everybody in the community would be satisfied with that as a sufficient oversight and a better remedy for the situation. There were some who were committing violent offenses that required a more stringent response from the criminal justice system. But the reality is many of these folks were low-level offenders, and many of them actually ultimately weren't charged with a number of offenses, but perhaps had picked up municipal-type offenses, nuisance-type violations in our neighborhoods and in the downtown area in particular. And so what we did then was we, working with BHD, they had the identifying information for those people. We did not because of HIPAA. But BHD did a really nice job of redoubling efforts and improving the coordination around those individuals such that as we reconstitute another list here to see what's changed in 2 years, a number of those individuals now would not any longer be on that list. So the good news is you can identify the people who were spending enormous amounts of resources on, and you can perhaps do something with them in terms of better monitoring them in the community with the people who have the credentials to do it. Mm-hmm. It's really not the desire of the criminal justice system to be the first resort for people with mental illness, but unfortunately over the years that is what has happened. We should be the last resort instead.
What model do you think is the best, Rob?
Well, clearly the model that we're undertaking here, that we're trying to move to, which is to have a broad enough array of accessible services that people can access when they are in need of treatment, and not just upon discharge from inpatient or emergency care, and again, not just when they're getting into crisis. It's ironic because, over time, the very laudable move to deinstitutionalize. This was not as big a problem 20 years ago when we were housing thousands upon thousands of people right. in institutions. It's become a problem because we, very appropriately decided that institutionalization was not the best approach, that community-based services was a far better way to go. Unfortunately, finding and devoting the resources to to providing the appropriate level of services in the community has been a challenge, not just for Milwaukee County, but really throughout the country.
Mm-hmm. So do we have enough centers? I'm trying to figure out what happens. If somebody is acting out a low-level offense or a more serious offense and first encounter is with the police, they immediately go to the county grounds, to the psychiatric hospital, or are there other alternatives?
Well, that's what's being developed now, and I think, and certainly Hector can speak more directly to that, but it's modeled, I think, and we're seeing a number of other cities who have identified, Seattle's one, Houston's one, Miami is one, where there can be community-based centers for police to drop off people that they encounter with a mental illness, with the idea that you diagnose somebody, you make sure they're receiving proper treatment, and then the law enforcement piece of it is secondary from the standpoint of assessing what kind of conduct may require or may not require an official response from the criminal justice system. And Hector can speak a little bit more to, I think, what they're endeavoring to undertake here.
Sure. First, there are several crisis services that are currently, and community-based services that are currently available right now where diversion can occur and does occur. But there's not really that 24/7 level of care currently in the community that would really help us in a more substantial way. And we are working towards having a better front door to mental health services, where historically it has been the emergency room. So now we're moving to having these community access hubs. We want to have one on the north side. And we intend to have, we're in the planning stages of developing that, but that would be on the north side third quarter of next year. And we'd have care coordination, peer supports, some outpatient therapy, and evaluation that would occur on a 24/7 basis. So that evaluation, that assessment can occur there, and the appropriate referrals can be made, some of which might require an emergency detention or an emergency room visit. But we believe that at least half of those, individuals that currently come to the emergency right now could be diverted to other community-based alternatives. So we want to continue to strengthen the partnership with the criminal justice system and use these access hubs as a vehicle where we can have diversion and ultimately getting individuals in the right program at the right time for the right duration.
Mm-hmm. I'm wondering about the people who the police officers having the ability to diagnose what's going on with somebody with mental illness. That's placing a big burden on police officers, isn't it, to determine whether it's a psychotic episode that's taking place, or how in the world do you know?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's a very fair question to be asked, and that's why one of the things we've done very well in this community over the last 2 or 3 years has been this combination of a team of professionals, law enforcement from MPD, as well as psychiatric professionals from the Behavioral Health Division, going out as a team to respond to these incidents, and they've done so very, very effectively. We have two of them now. We need more, but it's certainly something that we're all looking at in terms of making this an even higher budgetary priority, because we've seen that the response of that team of people has resulted in a lot of contacts with people, but fewer detentions in the PCS and out at the Behavioral Health Emergency Division, and that's a good thing. And ultimately, if you can have a combination of professionals together working on responding to this to people in crisis, we're going to have better results.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned the 24 hours, Rob. Other counties in the state, I understand, have a 72-hour period when doctors can evaluate. Is even 72 hours too short a period of time?
Well, and so let me be clear, I'm not a mental health professional, but I think, it clearly does place a lot of pressure, particularly on the larger urban counties where the volume is high, to have the time to do the necessary assessment to determine whether indeed the person needs to be held involuntarily or should be let go. And so this is the type of issue that we hear about across the country as we are questioning, as we are seeing some very unfortunate incidents nationally about people who have been in mental health treatment, but who are causing all sorts of problems in terms of shootings and so on. It's a very difficult set of circumstances. So I can't tell you whether 72 hours is enough, but I can tell you that 24 hours does raise some concerns. Now, there are some current concerns on the other side of the ledger in terms of should someone who doesn't need to be detained, right, should they be detained for 3 days before a decision is even made? And so there are all sorts. This is not a clear-cut, easy decision to make. It's been talked about in the legislature. legislature. I think we were close to changing the law during this past state budget, I believe, but for now it has stayed the same.
Mm-hmm. What about Medicaid? I was reading a report about Medicaid and the number of people who are using Medicaid services. Is Medicaid, are there enough people in the psychiatric profession to give the kind of help that is needed in this area?
Yep. So I think you are referring to a report that we released a couple of weeks ago in conjunction with the Human Services Research Institute and Technical Assistance Collaborative out of Massachusetts. And what we looked at is there sufficient outpatient psychiatry, clinically trained professionals who can do medication management, provide the types of services that you'd want to have available to individuals, either, again, when they are discharged from an inpatient or crisis care setting, or just when they need treatment in general. And I think the reason that this is beginning to be an even bigger problem, it's sort of a perverse irony of the Affordable Care Act. We now have many more people who are insured. However, the system that is in place to treat those individuals who have their insurance via Medicaid, that has not kept pace with the number of people and with the demand for service. We think that there's actually two elements to this issue. Number one, is there a provider shortage? I think without question, particularly when we look at psychiatrists and child psychiatrists. But at the same time, we think there may be some capacity out there that simply isn't being taken advantage of enough, and that there may be a greater role for the county working in conjunction with private sector stakeholders to organize the outpatient system a little bit better to ensure that discharge specialists do have knowledge of where there's capacity and where there isn't, so that consumers and federally qualified health centers have that coordinated response.
Hector, you want to comment on that?
Yeah, I think that's a good point. We definitely, there are a lot of providers, the health systems, federally qualified health centers, and the care management organizations, as well as our behavioral health division, have numerous programs and clinics that are out in the community. I think the one thing that we need to do better at is better coordination. And I know the Public Policy Forum's recommendation is for us to play a lead role in helping facilitate and better coordinate the existing array of services that currently exist out there. So we are having conversations with the private health systems, with Public Policy Forum, as well as the federally qualified health centers, on how we look at these recommendations and move them forward. But a key component of all of these great efforts that are currently existing in the community revolve around better coordination. And we have an internationally recognized program here right in our backyard and our wraparound for the kids system, where there is more robust coordination that exists with the kids' mental health programs. So we have some a model there that we want to expand and eventually bring in to the adult system as we move our community-based system forward.
Mm-hmm. And Ken, tell me more about how the legal system gets involved. If a lawyer is present or given to somebody who may be held at the hospital, we got a 24-hour period of time, what rights that person has, if there's a court-appointed lawyer and that person has to appear in court to determine a part of the treatment, or how do the courts get involved?
So that's that piece of it in terms of determining whether someone should stay at the mental health complex or not is handled actually by the Corporation Counsel's office. Many other DA's offices around the state may handle that, but here in Milwaukee, it's uniquely handled by the Corporation Counsel, so because it's a civil proceeding. So I'm not an expert in that process per se, but then when we look at these cases, if there are cases presented to our office, particularly low-level offenses, we're interested in trying to develop some alternative that could result in treatment and better coordination, particularly if a person already has a caseworker that may be helping to monitor them. We're much more interested in trying to identify that as a solution than prosecuting them criminally through the court system. Obviously, more serious cases, cases involving levels of violence or certainly felony-level cases of that nature, then do require more of a response from us, and ultimately, as the prosecution moves forward, if a person is deemed to be mentally excused for that action, essentially, for the commission of that crime, they could still receive hospitalization as opposed to an imprisoned outcome. And some of those cases are ones we have to handle because of the nature and the seriousness of the act itself. But many of the low-level types of offenses, we would prefer to divert to a community-based alternative that would better supervise and treat somebody who's got a mental illness.
What about the willingness on the part of the person who has mental illness to receive treatment?
Mm. Well, that's paramount in the decision making process. But again, the folks who are being brought in by law enforcement, for the most part, are being brought in involuntarily.
Mm-hmm.
And so then the question is, once the person gets to the mental health complex, is there any type of a change in heart in terms of does the individual want treatment? But where this gets very murky and very sticky and very difficult is in this civil rights versus public safety type of paradigm, and who's the decision maker in terms of what's best for individuals in terms of having to receive treatment and having to be detained at a mental health facility.
Yeah. We're going to welcome phone calls for all of our guests. I don't mean to exclude you from the conversation, so I won't. Public Policy Forum had a very important and interesting seminar, really, panel discussion just a little while ago, When the Mental Health and Justice Systems Collide. We have three of the participants with us this hour to talk about what was discussed, what is happening now in Milwaukee County, and what needs to happen. Rob Henkin is president of the Public Policy Forum. He has had a really long career in doing various things in government. He worked in Milwaukee County government for 10 years, director of research for the county board, director of health and human services. He was in Washington for a number of years as a senior aide to two congressmen. And he also, a man of many talents, is an adjunct associate professor at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee School of Architecture. Hector Colon is also here, director of the Milwaukee County Department of Health and Human Services. He was before that executive director of the Hispanic Professionals of Greater Milwaukee and has served as Director of Economic Development in the Wisconsin Housing and Economic Development Authority. Kent Lovern is Chief Deputy District Attorney for Milwaukee County. He oversees the administration of the Milwaukee County District Attorney's Office, which has 130 attorneys and a large support staff. He also supervises the Homicide Unit and the Public Integrity Unit. Here's our phone number, 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page is the Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter as well at K Dunn Show. We're learning about the changes that are taking place, more of a move to the direction of community care, crisis care, rather than going to the county grounds into a hospital and having law enforcement and the emergency room be the final say in what will happen to somebody who's experiencing mental illness who also has a run-in with the law. We have yet to talk about the kind of crisis intervention training police officers are receiving, what is required now, how that's working out, and all the related issues. So we'll be with you momentarily. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's go to phone calls for our panel, and we go to John in Janesville, our first caller. Hi, John.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for having me. It's an issue near and dear to my heart. I was a psychiatric nurse for the better part of 10 years. Milwaukee County was my first job.
Hmm.
And talking of shifting to community-based care, one of my major concerns, and I know it's a constant concern, is the cost. I know how much these prescriptions are per month. Oftentimes, one medication will be $400, $500, $600. And really, we're going to be giving meds because that's what modern psychiatry is all about. We don't really focus on as much stuff as prescribing meds. And I'm wondering who's going to bear the cost of that. Because we talk about, yeah, we'll shift it to community-based care and we'll do this and that, but who's there ready to pick up the ball and run with it? I haven't seen it in my experience.
You know, stay with us, please. Hector Colon, that's yours.
Sure. So we've done several things. One is we're closing our long-term care. So this is really something that no longer exists. You don't warehouse people with mental illness in long-term care institutions anymore. But as a result of that, we have, first of all, it's the right thing to do. It provides more dignity, and the research shows that when you provide individuals with housing and supportive services, they live with more dignity, there's better outcomes, and again, it's the right thing to do. But we have in our long-term care facility about $16 million of tax levy. There's about 75% of these individuals that are in that have been in our long-term care institution, they're eligible for family care. So that means that family care and the funding that comes along with it has a responsibility to provide them with the supportive services and the housing needed to help with a successful transition. And this is an example where it's been hugely successful. These individuals have been transitioned into the community. There are some individuals from that have intellectual and co-occurring mental illness that some thought were too dangerous to live in the community, and they were going to be in our emergency rooms at the Behavioral Health Division. And I'm happy to say that of Hilltop, there were 68 individuals that got transitioned into the community over a 2.5-year period. Only one of those individuals came back for a short-term psychiatric inpatient admission. One, no interactions with the criminal justice system, no interactions with the private health systems or us. If all 68 of them came back for some short-term level of care, that would be okay. That's a level of service that they may require throughout their recovery. But for one individual to come back just shows how successful it has been. But that has allowed us to first and foremost get better outcomes, more dignity, and the right thing to do, but free us up of some tax levy that has allowed us to redesign and expand more of our community-based services.
How many people were in long-term care, Hector?
So in 2010, there was about 150 individuals in our long-term care unit. Today, we have about 8. Mm-hmm. And the last 8 will be transitioned over the next couple of months.
Mm-hmm. And do we have enough identified housing for all of the people to make the transition? Is this plentiful or not?
Very good question. Actually, there were some in the community that were reluctant and even criticized us for not developing capacity first. And we were very careful about making sure that we didn't build smaller institutions in the community. We took a person-centered approach, and whatever one person needs, we develop the resources and services to ensure the success of that very individual. And there are so many people literally sitting around a table to ensure that there's adequate supports to ensure a successful transition. And so they're happening on a person-centered basis. Whatever a person needs, that's being developed. And they're not smaller institutions in the community. So, yes, there's the money is following the person, the housing, and the supportive services are also there to ensure that this is a successful transition.
Mm-hmm. I'm interested in your work as a psychiatric nurse, John. Tell me what model you think is best. What are we missing?
John? We're over-reliant on medication because that seems to be the silver bullet for everything. There's got to be a lot more staff development, I think, as a nurse in Milwaukee County, and they've had bad press, but wonderful things do happen there. I felt pretty used and abused, and I didn't last long, and that's pretty common.
I'm sure it's a very hard job. I'm sure medication is really necessary, though, in a lot of instances, isn't it?
I saw it work wonders, but I saw a lot of people come in with maybe normal depression, like somebody died. Well, you're going to feel low about that. Coming in seeking meds right away and kind of expecting that. Instead of, well, you got to kind of work out the normal emotions in life. You're going to be down once in a while. So I don't know what the right answer is. I mean, we have to get a little more honest about what true mental illness is. Now we're kind of diagnosing everything as a mental illness rather than what we would, traditional schizophrenia, which we all agree is a profound disruption of your mental process.
Mm-hmm. Which I wanted to ask Kent more about this, the kind of training that, because police officers are the ones who are running into many of these people who may be chronically mentally ill. What about the training that they're receiving to find, can they make a diagnosis? What do they need to know before knowing what to do with somebody?
Well, a lot of it, while it might not be diagnostic in nature, is helping officers understand what mental illness is. Helping them understand how people manifest that they have a mental illness, what are common responses of people who are confronted by a police officer or someone else someone acting in an official capacity and how to respond to that. So a number of the officers now in our community are undertaking what we call crisis intervention training. The Milwaukee Police Department has, with the assistance of the Greater Milwaukee Foundation, has ordered it for, I believe, all of its personnel to undergo a week of it, 40 hours worth. A number of suburban agencies are doing the same thing with their staff. The Sheriff's Department, I believe, has done that with a number of its staff as well. And a lot of it, and the people teaching this training to the police officers are people from other sectors. The healthcare sectors are coming in primarily, who have the experience of dealing with people with mental illness, and explaining to officers what is a reaction to expect from somebody and how to respond to that in an effort to try to avoid a situation accelerating to something more dangerous. And helping officers with regard to just the best way to try to communicate with someone who may be in a mental health crisis. And I can tell you, and I've helped out with some of these trainings from time to time when asked, and the officers want this training. They are very receptive to it. They understand these are difficult situations that they confront, and they want the training. They want the guidance about how to respond to these difficult situations.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about money for a moment, because we haven't been a society known for parity in mental health insurance, even, or for care of people with problems. Isn't that still an issue, Rob?
Yeah, and I think your caller raised a very good point. And there's no disputing the fact that the county thus far has made a very diligent effort to redirect those savings that it's experiencing from its reductions in long-term care and inpatient and putting those into community-based services. But to the extent that there is going to be a reduction in overall beds in this community, it's going to require a substantial ramp up of services, even perhaps above and beyond the direct flow of funds between the savings versus the investments by the county. And, you know, the county is in a very difficult position. This is budget time at county government, and we're in the midst of the budget, well, the tail end of the budget process. But what we have is a situation where mental health is competing with transit and competing with parks and cultural institutions, and the whole array of county services with a limited property tax levy and very little local revenue generating capacity. And that's a problem. It's a problem for city government. It's a problem for county government. And it remains to be seen whether we can make the types of investments that are going to be necessary to truly recreate and redesign the system.
And the reasons for doing it, because it's the right thing to do, it's humane, because it's for safety reasons? What are the reasons?
Well, it's all of the above, but on just looking at it through the fiscal lens, it also makes good fiscal sense, because we all know that treating somebody in an inpatient setting or in an emergency room setting is likely far more expensive than treating them in an outpatient setting. Where it gets difficult is that you're really expanding the population of serving. To really do community-based model correctly, you're offering services essentially to anyone who feels that they need them or who can show that they need them, as opposed to just providing services when somebody comes to you because they've presented to you with an issue. And so you're going to grow the population you serve, but you should also, in that respect, by treating people earlier in the process, you should have the capacity to reduce the overall number of inpatient and crisis beds.
John, thanks very much for your call. Linda in Madison, hi.
My concern is, especially in Dane County, there was one instance where the parents of a mentally ill man were trying to get assistance getting him in the system for treatment because they feared he was at the beginning of a psychotic break. There wasn't enough evidence that he was dangerous, and then he went on to commit a triple murder. Mm. What resources do family members have when they see a member who is getting ill or somebody who's just exhibiting symptoms for the first time to get help before they have that psychotic break and commit a crime?
Mm-hmm. Good question.
Sure.
Hector, what's the answer?
So it's a difficult question, and you know, the law is such that protects the rights of individuals, and if they don't feel that they want to adhere to treatment, they do not have to, unless you get emergency detention or you can do a three-party petition, and that's something that some individuals have done to if they have personal experience with the person or the client, and they have specific stories that can illustrate that the person is a danger to themselves or others, they can go through that process, the three-party petition process. But it is a legal process that one would have to go to, go through in order to require or demand that that person get involuntary treatment. So it's a challenge. I think that by having more community-based services in the community could help. So if we create environments that are non-threatening and somebody might feel a little bit of anxiety or a little depression, they just want a place to go, these community-based facilities could help with that. But to the original question, it's a tough one because it's you know, you have to go through a legal process to get somebody involuntary treatment.
Yeah. Ken, do you want to respond to this?
I was just going to say, from my experience as a board member for the National Alliance for the Mentally Ill a number of years ago, that was a constant frustration expressed by family members. You know, we want to have the balance of allowing a person who faces the potential of a mental health commitment to have that ability, that civil right to have some autonomy over that process. But the loved ones around that family are desperately seeking help and support, and it's difficult. It is frustrating, and it's just a balance that I share Hector's hope that the more we can build up community-based resources, the hope is that people who are at an earlier age manifesting signs of mental distress and maybe long-term mental illness are we're addressing that better at the community level so that we don't reach those very terrible outcomes for some of them.
Well, Rob, what do you think?
I guess I'd echo what both of the other speakers said. And again, these aren't easy decisions. For every case where somebody should have received treatment and didn't, and something terrible happened, there also may be a case where somebody was detained against their own will, who shouldn't have been. And so achieving that balance has always been difficult. Here in Milwaukee, you know, the case that really started the whole framework for dealing with this originated here. I'm blanking on I think Lassard was the name.
Right.
So you know, this has been a struggle here in this community as well to balance the desires and the very appropriate desires of family members to get treatment for their family members versus the rights of the individual to be able to make that decision for him or herself.
Yeah, our number is 800-486-8655. Ann in Green Bay. Hi.
Hello. You just talked about officers going to training for 40 hours. 40 hours of training and all of a sudden they're mental health professionals. I'm having a really hard time swallowing that because actually I feel a lot of these officers have some mental defects themselves.
Yeah, I don't think that any chief would indicate that 40 hours of treatment, or I'm sorry, that 40 hours of training makes them a mental health professional. There's no question about that, and I want to express that I think what that is intended to do is it's intended to help officers with their communication skills toward people who they might encounter having mental health distress. There's no question that's not any substitute for the type of training that, for example, our mental health professionals receive and are able to administer in a team format that we have in a limited fashion here. And so I think that, but the reality is, if we could afford to have teams, greater numbers of teams of mental health professionals with police, that would be ideal. I think that's something that our community is searching to see how much more of that we can fund and support. But we also know that there will be those encounters that police officers have with people where there just won't be the ability for a mental health professional to be there at that time. And it can be helpful for an officer to receive enhanced training about how to communicate with people, at least until a mental health professional is called to arrive on the scene to assist.
Thank you very much, Anne, for your call. We'll take more phone calls in a moment. We're talking about the issue of the mental health and justice systems in Milwaukee County, particularly, where this has been a big issue for some time, what happens when they collide. There are more than half of the 11,000 admissions to Milwaukee County Psychiatric Crisis Service last year involved emergency detention by police. The kind of training that police are receiving, do we have the services that will help keep people who have mental illness out of crisis? Are people utilizing those services now? Are there anywhere near enough of them now? There is a transition going on now to more of community-based treatment. So where is that? And are we sentencing too many people to jail who might just be experiencing a profound mental illness? Well, we have some lines open if you'd like to join our conversation. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter at K Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We have this message on Facebook from Tanya Gentleman. If you would like to know more, and I'm sure all of you know about this, the wraparound model for supporting people with mental illness, there is always a chance to look at community partnerships. We work with people. Many of our clients are children in Dane County. We'd love to expand the discussion about community-based mental health support. Is that a model? Is there any model in Wisconsin or nationally for what we're doing here now? Hector?
Well, we do have one internationally recognized model in our wraparound for our kids. And they literally travel throughout the United States and even the world for other places to really learn about the model. And what it is, it's a community-based model. They have a really robust coordination that exists among the care for those individuals. They have expanded crisis mobile team to help with our law enforcement partners. So there is a model we have right in our backyard. And there's also several care management organizations that also do a really good job that are right here locally. But we're also learning from other places across the country. There's some good work going on in New York and in Dallas, in Miami. So we've really been trying to learn from everybody. And as we've been redesigning our system here locally, there's bits and pieces of from all of these places. But as we move forward, our next biggest thing we need to do is make sure that there's better coordination. We have care coordinators now with our adult system. We've started that, and part of our efforts is to work closely with the criminal justice system on those 85 individuals that was mentioned earlier in this conversation. And we're seeing much better success with those individuals as a result of those coordinated efforts. But it's to expand that coordination above and beyond just us and the criminal justice system, but with our private hospitals and with the care management organizations and with the federally qualified health centers in a more robust way. So that's something that some work ahead of us that we're looking forward to.
All right, let's go to Rick in Milwaukee. Hi, Rick.
Hi.
Hi.
I used to work at a program in Phoenix, Arizona, that was countywide. At any one time, there would be at least three mobile units available for crisis calls. We work with the police a lot, and when we weren't on calls, we would be doing prevention. And it was a really good program, and I'm trying to find out if there's anything like that going to happen here, because I know the mobile program that was out of the hospital, the county hospital, was really, really limited the last time I heard anything.
And what kind of work were you doing with it, Rick?
It was basically emergency mental health.
So I can, we do have a crisis mobile team. I believe we have about 28 to 30 of those individuals that work in the community. And what we're trying to do, though, is continue, and we recently also, at first, we just had that for first shift. Now we've expanded it to include second and third shift. And we when we intervene, the outcomes are very successful in terms of diversion. So we do want to continue to expand that. But we also want to be a little bit more nimble in our approach. Right now, our crisis mobile team is pretty much tied to our hospital. as we develop more of these community access hubs, we want to have some of these individuals in the community, again, being more nimble, being more responsive, and being quicker in our response is something that we are desiring. But the crisis mobile team certainly is a very effective intervention at diverting crisis and getting people to the appropriate programs they should be.
How many more of those mobile teams do you think we need in Milwaukee, Kent?
Well, I think what we'd like to see is a build out of the teams that include not just the mental health professional but the police officer at the same time. And so that's a separate type of team. And I think if we have a couple of those and we have another along the way, I think we would love to see one in every police district. That may be too optimistic because we also need some to administer to the suburbs as well. But even if we had, if we could get up to half a dozen of those teams of officers with mental health professionals together as a team, I think that would be very, very helpful. And again, the mental health mobile crisis teams right now are very effective. And that's, again, why it's important for officers to receive that training about how to interact with somebody. So at the same time, they're calling for that mobile crisis team to come in and back them up and help them solve the situation. And that's why that training is so important to help them just keep the situation as diffuse as possible until someone with the appropriate background arrives to really connect that person better with mental health services. Mm-hmm. So you know, we certainly have the groundwork laid for some good things here, but we all agree that there's more that can be done.
Rob, you mentioned earlier all the other priorities, and there are many of them, of course. So where does this fit? How do you determine? There are a lot of things that could be done. They're really good ideas. How do you determine how much we can spend to do some of it?
Well, that's the $280 million question, which is the approximate amount of the county property tax levy. That levy has to be distributed among a variety of different programs, and it's always been one of the challenges where, you know, county governments were created as arms of state government. And in concept, the services provided by county government that are mandated by the state ought to be paid for by state and or federal resources. Over time, that has increasingly not been the case, which has meant that the county has had to divert more of its local property tax levy to mandated services, which has left it with fewer resources for discretionary services like parks and cultural institutions and transit.
Right.
So I don't have a good answer for you. I would say to you, however, that under state law, Milwaukee County is mandated to ensure that anyone who needs emergency psychiatric care within Milwaukee County can receive it. And so while that on paper would seem to suggest that the mandate only requires Milwaukee County to have an emergency room, in practice, Milwaukee County needs to ensure that there are sufficient services across the continuum to not only provide that emergency care, but to hopefully provide the types of care, which clearly Director Colon and others believe 100% is the right way to go, but to provide the types of preemptive care so that the emergency care isn't even required.
Yeah.
So it's going to cost the county in the long run not to have a robust array of community-based services.
One more call, running short on time. It's Paulina in Milwaukee. Hi. Paulina in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hello?
Yeah, go right ahead, Pauline.
Okay, I'm just wondering if the prevalence of mental illness is greater now than in years past. It certainly seems like it. I'm just wondering what the professionals think, and if so, what do they attribute that to?
Hector?
So the statistics show that 1 in 5 individuals have a mental illness. And so there are a lot of people that have identified themselves with a mental illness, and that's why it's so important that we work together to address this issue. It's not just about the Behavioral Health Division. The criminal justice system has to be informed and partners in this. The private health systems need to play a role. And we all need to come together to be able to address this issue. In terms of what is causing the prevalence, you could say it's multifaceted. Some of it's biological and genetics. Others relate to trauma and drugs. So you really can't pinpoint on exactly what is causing this, but certainly we know that 1 in 5 individuals have a mental illness, and that's a lot of people that need help and treatment.
Kathleen, if I...
Yes, you've got about 30 seconds. Go right in.
I just want to add again, the Affordable Care Act impact, that now that we are providing more opportunity for people to get coverage paid for, it could be that they're going to be seeking mental health services, whereas previously they were not. Does that mean there's more mental illness? No. But does it mean that that's a good thing and we should be trying to provide those services for people? I think most would agree it is.
Yeah, thank you all very much. A very informative hour. We'll see where we are next year at this time on the whole issue. Our guest this hour, the president, just speaking, Rob Henken of the Public Policy Forum. That was the organization that had this public policy forum on these issues just a couple weeks ago here in Milwaukee. We thank him for being with us. Hector Colon, director of the Milwaukee County Department of Health and Human Services, and Kent Lovern, who is the chief deputy district attorney for Milwaukee County. Thanks to Scotty Myers for producing this hour, and thanks to Scotty as well for on-air production here in our studios in downtown Milwaukee.